And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me today is my good friend, Michele Vera. Michele, what is up?
Shall we put Hami in the jingle before the show? Just as a sign of respect or as a jinx or whatever, like
I have the recording of me talking to Hami last year when we could actually talk to NBA players outside of Zoom, and we need to because he was really good. We can start there. The Thunder win in Brooklyn with Kevin Durant on the court playing basketball, taking 21 shots. The Thunder beat that team 129 points to 116. What a wild night for OKC. They go down big early. They allow 41 points in the first quarter. And I thought, oh boy, the Thunder are in for it tonight. And then they go on to only score 40 points. They score less than they did in the first quarter, in the second and third. The Thunder kind of put the clamps down on them, and then also the Nets kind of put the clamps down on themselves to a degree. But the Thunder took advantage and played really well. They played really good basketball on both ends. They got tremendous production off their bench. What did they have? 44 points off the bench last night. I mean, we're talking Hamidou Diallo, Alexi Pokuševski, Isaiah Roby, Théo Maledon, Kendrick Williams. Kendrick didn't score. You get 44 points from those dudes? It's nuts. And it's really, it comes from Hami. Hami's 25 points, 4 steals, 4 assists, 3 rebounds. What do we make of this, Michele?
Long story, because there's not a short one. We were very harsh on Hami over the first 3 preseason games plus the early part of the season, because he was not doing the things that we wanted him to do, like driving to the basket, getting rebounds, and shooting corner threes. Now, he's still doing part of what it makes him like a very unnerving player, like taking pull-up jumpers and stuff like that, that are going in at a very bad percentage, and they completely destroy the flow of the game. The point is, he's doing everything else to such a high level and efficiency that it's undeniable. He is turning himself into a player that matters on the bench, because like a guy like Taurean Prince, what's his salary? 12 million?
Yeah.
It was basically a no-show. Hami was the guy on the court when both second units were there. And now the Brooklyn second unit is terrible. It's very, very bad. And I think that if they want to be a real championship contender, they have to do something to address that. But Hami is playing out of his mind. And the moment of the game where I think I cursed live. watching the game early this morning, when he had that drive and he found Isaiah Roby on a pick and roll setting, I said, wow.
Yeah.
This is the new version of Hami? A guy that basically is not playing just to score, but also to put others in position to succeed, and leveraging his amazing athleticism to do this kind of stuff? This is a different player. And yes, we were harsh. Yes, I would have traded him if the right opportunity had presented itself. But it's fine. I mean, Hami was not this player 3 weeks ago. It was just not. And credit, immense credit to the development team of OKC and to Coach Daigneault or Daigneault, whatever Cage is calling him. Daigneault, I think it's a pronunciation. Well, Daigneault. they are doing such an amazing job with these guys. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Hami is probably the guy who is showing off the most. But if you look also at Dort, at Basile defensively, even Poku defensively, mm-hmm. these guys are transforming themselves and being productive on the court. It's just insane.
It really is. And I asked Hami about it after the game. And in my head, like I'm like when you're about to ask a question, like you rehearse the question over and over again in your head, you're thinking, how am I going to word it? What am I going to say? And I really just wanted to know, like, what? And I was trying to say it in a not mean way. Like, and my question in my head, and I didn't say it like this, was like mentally, like, what are you doing that's different? You know, because mm-hmm. your decision making is better. Like, I just said, like, you're an elite athlete. You're always been an elite athlete. But, like, what are you doing with regards to decision making? Like, how, like, what has been different for you over the last two games? Because this has been obviously different. And his answer was really interesting because he said that he was working with not only the coaching staff on, like, film and stuff like that. He said he's been watching a ton of film. But then he also said that he talks a lot to his teammates, and his teammates are helping him out a ton and telling him like where things are going to be, how he's picking his spots. He said he talks to Shea a ton mm-hmm. about passing and about making different kind of reads. And he said Shea has helped him a lot with regards to that. And I was like, that is like just like a really interesting thing. Like the Thunder are collaborating at a really high level, and you can tell. And the team was like this last year, definitely to a degree, but they're even more so this year. It's like there's just no ego whatsoever within the team from top to bottom. And they all are just collaborating to try to get better. And I think Hami is, at least Hami's last two games are a direct reflection of that. Now, Hami's going to come back to earth. I mean, Hamidou Diallo is not going to shoot 70% from the field for the rest of the season. But if he can average like 9 points a game off the bench, like that's a dramatic improvement for him from where he's been. And if he can do it off the bounce and stuff like that, like he may get himself a contract from somebody. Maybe it's the Thunder, maybe it's not. But he's going to have like a chance to make it in the league. Whereas I would have said, like before the start of the season, if you asked me, is Hami getting a second contract? I'd be like, maybe at league minimum by a team that just wants to try. You know, he has a chance if he can continue to improve his decision making, because that's really the only thing keeping him from being a great player is the decision making. And so if he can be a better decision maker, then he can be in the league for a little while.
Yeah. 2 points. One, I'm glad that you mentioned this little interview that you made with Hami, because and the point that he made about Shea, that pass to Roby was really Shea-like, was mm-hmm. getting in the teeth of the defense and then look for the cutter going from basically the central of the court, and he's clearly improving. Now, if this is the leadership that Shea is going to bring to this team, this changes a lot, because one point is wanting to be good, to win, and bring your like teammates along, and trying to maximize you, their position in like it's a bit convoluted. What I want to say is, it's different to really care about your teammates' improvement, even to sure. even if that deters in part your numbers. And to me, this is more of what Shea is doing this season. Like, he's not scoring. He could score 40. I have no doubts. He can get to the rim whenever he wants. He can get to a pull-up threes, to a pull-up three whenever he wants. He can take 15 threes in a game. No issue yeah. whatsoever. And probably on certain nights, this would be better for the team, but it would not be better for his teammates. And if this is the leadership that in a year where you understand that winning to a super high degree is not the only important thing, and probably it's not the important thing, then it speaks very highly about Shea's development. And last sentence on Hami, the defensive part is what is impressing me the most. Because last year, he was athletic, he was good off the bounce, in spots, but the defense was not good. Like, everyone was saying, well, Hami would be a good defender. No, it was nothing like that. Now, the second unit is the unit that is putting the clamps on opponent teams.
Isn't that wild?
It is wild. Now, granted, New York's second unit and Brooklyn's second units are very, very, very bad. There was very no bad. Stopping of Miami. Miami yeah. has an elite second unit. Now,
yep.
But stopping average or below average second units to bring anything to the game is extremely important for a second unit that is growing. It's not stopping the development tomorrow. It will be better in a year or 2 years. Mm-hmm. So if now they are able to go on the court, to get on the court and putting a clamps on inferior players, this is already a result that I did not expect at the beginning yeah. of the season. And this is also because you play five guys, maybe Robbie is the weakest link on that unit, that can play good defense.
I mean, it's it is just crazy. And a lot of it, you have to give credit to Coach Mark Degnault and his staff. And for just the leadership from top to bottom for the Thunder to develop not only these players, but develop a coaching staff. I mean, they identified Mark early on at Florida, thought, okay, we see something here and him as a coach. They bring him in and they don't just like shove him in like the film room or something. They send him to the G League and put him on the G League staff and have him coach the Blue. It's great. They see a lot from him with the Blue. I mean, a lot. Quickly, they say, okay, there's something here with him. We need to bring him onto the coaching staff. And there was the writing was on the wall with Billy and his contract and also the direction of the team. Mm-hmm. And so I think all along they saw what they saw in Mark Degnault and decided to bring him along. And he's done a really good job so far. Now it's early and they're having success. And it's really easy to coach a team and have them latch on to the things you say when you're winning and it's early. I mean, we have to take a look at the rest of January and into February. And then if they still have this same mentality by the time we get to like February 25th, then I'm already blown away by what Degnault's done, but I will just be floored if they all have this same kind of pep in their step. Because like Shea will sit down in front of the Zoom camera and he is, win or lose so far this season, he sat down and he is like pretty funny and engaging and is like trying to mess with the PR staff, you know, before we get started with questions, and then is like asking questions to the PR staff after we're done. Like he's kind of delightful. And I just wonder if we get how far we get into this, if all of that will continue. I asked Shea about Mark Degnault after the game. Mm-hmm. He went on and on and on. He's like, great coach, player's coach, love playing for him. He, you know, helps really motivate us. I mean, he just kept going on and on and on and on and on. And I just asked, like, what have you learned about Coach Degnault in your first 9 games? He could have just been like, yeah, nothing. I was with him last year, you know, and that would have been a fine answer. Mm-hmm. But he took the opportunity to like really praise what he's done. He said that he loves playing for him. I mean, he said those words. And I think some people kind of question like, what's Shea's mentality? How does he even feel about this hire? And he said, I love playing for him. It's like, oh, okay, wow. He didn't have to say that. He didn't have to say any mm-hmm. of that. But then, I don't know. And also, Shea's night was really impressive. We haven't even mentioned that. He had 31 points, 6 boards, 7 assists, 2 steals, a block, only 2 turnovers in his 36 minutes. He's starting to pick his spots too, but we also have to know that this Brooklyn Nets defense is abysmal.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like oddly horrific. And even Steve Nash after the game last night said they just quit after they got up 15.
Yeah.
And that's not good. it's an honest answer from Steve Nash. Not good, Steve. That's not good. And I know that you've got some veterans on your team. You got KD and Jeff Green and Torian Prince and guys that think that that have already made it and that have already accomplished a lot. But shoot, man, like this, it's not good to be 11 games in and your team's already quitting against a team like the Thunder.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, while I was watching, there were a moment in the game, I think it was in the third, where I had the impression that Brooklyn was being lucky with the shots that OKC was missing, especially from three. I mean, I think that at a certain point, they had a few possessions where they were already up, but they attempted 4 or 5 threes completely open from the top of the key and or like good spots. And from good shooters, I think 2 or 3 between Horford and Hill. And I thought, wow, they could be up 15 by the end of the third. Yeah. Or middle of the way in the third. And yeah, as you said, there was no defense on a pick and pop. They just decided to collapse and hope that the interior defense was to be good enough. And the Thunder exploited that to such a high degree that it was even embarrassing at moments. Now, I think we are seeing a trend from OKC about the three-point shooting, but also the fact that if the shot doesn't go in, they have some counter. They can be effective, especially against team that lack elite rim protection and a smart, very smart center. But even against them, they won against Gobert. They won against Steven Adams. They won against Mitchell Robinson. So they are not going to take a lot of mid-range shots. And they are really trying to take high-value shots. And they are succeeding. I mean, the ball moves so well. And Shea is a huge part of that. He's just in control. He doesn't force it. I mean, 31, effortless points from Shea. It was the best game by far. And even on defense, he was engaged. He had 2 steals, but I think he deflected more than two balls. And yeah, I mean, I'm extremely impressed. And I'm also glad that Horford had a kind of a bounce back game. He was very good. Even if, as I think Brett mentioned it on After Dark, about he started the game posting up like crazy. And I think, like, I don't know why he did that, but clearly he understood that going against Josh Holland, he's not Josh the name. Jared Allen, didn't sound right. He's not a good post-up defender, and he kind of took it personally, and he was very effective.
He was posting up KD, though.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, real. If KD was on him, he was calling for it.
Yeah.
And it was funny. He scored on him a couple times. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any problem with
me neither.
A Thunder player posting up Kevin Durant and scoring on him. He was super effective last night. Took the most shots on the team last night. Al Horford did. And it's only 17, so it's not like it's a ton. But yeah, he finished with 22 points, 6 boards, 3 assists, a steal and a block. Only 2 turnovers. He was tremendous. Dort continues to do this thing where he shoots the ball from really far away. There's like this line that exists like way out far away from the basket, and he's shooting it beyond that line, making it. And he's done it in 9 consecutive games. In every single game, Lu Dort has made a 3. And you have to at least feel like it's real, because the form is staying pretty consistent, which is something last season, like even in game 7, like his feet were all over the place
yeah.
with regards to
like
shooting.
In college.
Yeah, where
college days he's, are hilarious.
Oh my gosh, where he's shooting and his feet are like facing the bench, and he's cleaned up a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not perfect, but he's cleaned up a lot of it, and he's improved a lot. And I'm trying to remember who made this point. I think it was Kevin O'Connor made this point last week, was that you look at his free throw percentage in college and then in his first year, and even with the Blue, and how that can be a better indicator of what a shooter can be. And he's always been in the upper 70s as a free throw shooter, which is like, okay, yeah, like this is one of those instances where you can see that that can translate over to shooting the three ball. And he's improved a lot, and he's still hitting a crazy percentage. He hit 2 of 3 last night, which is
one off the dribble. What was your reaction?
I don't even know what to say anymore, Michele. Like, I don't even know how to feel anymore. Like, it feels like a fever dream.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't, I just can't even, I'm like holding on to this thought, like, okay, there's a distinct chance this is not real.
Yeah.
Is like what I'm seeing real is like my question that I'm asking myself when I see him not only shoot spot ups, but off the dribble. There is a lot more in Lu Dort than what we have seen so far. I'll say that. He's very young. He fancies himself a point guard. And I think that there is more off the dribble stuff to come. It's unlikely, but there's somebody inside Lu Dort that is not just a role player, that is not just hit threes and defend. There is a chance. What is the chance? 2%, 4%, 5% at best that he can be that, but it's in there. Like, he has the chance to be not only a nice role player, but like a really good NBA player that can do things off the bounce, that can find guys off like a pick and roll and be the pick and roll ball handler. Like, he can do those things. It's there. Can he do it at an elite level? I don't know. I'm going to stop questioning what Lu Dort's capable of, though, because he was 4 of 6 from the field last night. 13 points on 6 shots. He's not forcing anything. He's playing tremendous defense. He's playing with tremendous effort. I believe that part of what helps these guys get to like a really high energy level is not only the coaching staff and Mark Daigneault, but like Lu Dort getting out there. And I'm sure like you've played sports. Like, when somebody brings like an energy level on your team, like you're like, okay, I need to try to match that. Yeah. Like, I need to try to, like, I can't, if I'm even going like 70% speed, like I look like I'm lollygagging next to this guy who's going like 120 the whole time. Like, so I have to bring my energy level up just to keep up with him and to feel like I'm contributing. And so like those guys are important, and Lou's one of those guys where just the effort is just tremendous. And I think it goes perfectly along with Al Horford and George Hill, who are just really smart, gritty players that play the right way on both ends. I think it's helping raise Bazley and helping raise Shea's level a little bit too, because Shea wasn't always this kind of defender last season. Even in the playoffs, he kind of didn't show a ton, but he's improved. But I think a lot of it's Lu Dort, and I'm kind of rambling now about Lou, but I don't know what to do, Michele. I don't know what to do about this guy. I think there's just, he's got a lot more in there than we think.
Yeah, and I want to make a point that is probably useless and probably stupid, but I cannot help myself thinking away from this idea that if he sheds a certain amount of pounds, his ball handling abilities can really improve. Because like, it's not easy to be like, when you're driving a truck compared to a city car, it's way more difficult to stop, turn, and do things at a certain speed when you're built like a truck. And it's not that, it's not fat, it's muscles. He has too much muscles. Now, this helps him sustaining contacts, absorbing, being extremely strong against guys like Harden. But I wonder, and maybe the answer is no, and he can improve just by doing drills and whatever. But what if he's, again, 10% lighter with the same, you can keep the strength even if you have less mass. This is fact. You don't need to be a truck in order to be strong. But I wonder, would that help him? And on the free throws, like free throws are a very good tell for your upper part motion, mm-hmm. which is not the issue with Lu Dort shooting. We've clearly said that many times, the issue with Lu Dort is the lower part, where he's so strong that he has to deal with that. And so now he's getting to a point where he's clearly working a ton on his shot. The pull-up was perfect. Like he stopped on a dime, went up, and the shot looked amazing. I almost fell off my indoor bike. I cannot scream because like kids are sleeping, but I was like, now he's doing this? Like taking pull-up threes? Like, are we insane? What year is that? It's
I know.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Another credit to, I mean, this is, the Thunder are just developing guys really well.
Oh, yeah.
And not everybody is going to develop. Like, sure, there have been guys that haven't developed under the Thunder, and they just didn't develop under anybody. Like, Perry Jones, not in the league anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be guys like that. But when the Thunder have a chance with guys, they've done really well. And they've done really well with this particular crew and with the coaching staff that they have. And they've had, obviously, some carryover from the last few years of their coaching staff. And like they did a really good job with Dort and Bazley last year. They're continuing to do a really good job with them. And now you're seeing guys like Hamidou Diallo, who we knew was like a really raw player. And it's funny, like we know and we hear this out of the draft, like, oh, this guy's super raw. Okay. What that means when you say that, it means it's going to take some time to develop them. And that's the case with Alexei Pokuševski. Like, Alexei Pokuševski is super raw. Like, he should not be a good player this season. Like, he just shouldn't be. That's not who he's supposed to be this year. And that's okay, because we knew that when they drafted him that he was very young, very raw, and needed some molding. Same with Hami. Hami needed that. Hami is a little different because he's a second-round pick, and most second-round picks just don't amount to anything. Now, they're having a chance to mold him a little bit, and he's shown the last two games that he's capable of a little bit more. That's great. He's going to backslide. We saw it with Darius Bazley. Darius Bazley had three games in a row where he's scoring like double figures into the 20s, really great player, and then his scoring, you know, took a back seat in the last game, in this game and against New York. It's fine. Like, I mean, Hami may have 2 points against the Lakers. And it doesn't matter. Like, he's shown that he can do this. Now, the next level, like, he's a fine NBA player. You know, he's probably going to make it. To become like a really good NBA player, you have to do it every night. Like, you have to do it consistently. That's what separates even like the George Hills of the world, who's like, George Hill, really good player, going to play in the league for a lot longer than he already has, which is a long time. It's great. he's going to play in the league a lot longer because he can do it every single night.
Yeah.
Same with guys like Horford. And then you have like your upper level guys like your Kevin Durant. But if you can do it every night, I mean, that's what Baisley and Dort and Shea are learning to do right now, which is really valuable. And Shea's already shown he can do it. Like, he's already that guy. For Baisley, he still has to learn how to do it every single night. Like, how do I get to 12 every night? You know, and he hasn't figured that out yet. Funny enough, like, Lou Dort's almost figured out how to get there.
Yeah, no matter how many shots, which is what you want from guys like him.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to be shots. The what else mentality that we discussed a few weeks ago. It's like this. Now, I want to make a point about Baisley. Now, it sounds like he had a horrible night, but I don't think he did.
Just scoring. No. He was good otherwise.
Yeah, 21 shots from KD, plus, I would say, 6 trips to the line, which is 27 possessions. And then he had 4 turnovers, which is 31 possessions. Now, you keep KD to 36 points on 31 possessions. You made a hell of a work, a hell of a job on him. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, like, could be better than that. Yes, but he made one foul by guarding KD. And it was a rip move. It was not paying attention at the end of the first half, I think. And in the second half, it was really, really into that. Like avoiding to stay too close to KD, forcing him into mid-range jumpers. KD will score. He's probably the greatest scorer of our times, or top 5 scorer of our times. So it's okay. But he wants to be the guy who guards KD. And yeah, I think he did a pretty good job. And he was part of the unit being effective in the second half. So it's good signs that you can take 6 shots and still contributing at a very high level defensively. This is what we were saying before. It's not necessary for every player to take 10 plus shots a game. when you're called upon, sure. Not every night.
Yeah, and Baze wants these challenges, and he's clearly the guy to defend Kevin.
Yeah,
he's the only guy that's got the length and the athleticism to stay with him, and he did pretty good. Yeah, Kevin still had 36 points on 21 shots. You know, Kevin had a great night, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, I didn't have as much like anger in my heart watching Kevin play yesterday. Mm-hmm. I feel like I could just watch him play, and everything is just so effortless with him on the offensive end. Like, he's just gets to a jumper. You can test it perfectly. It goes in anyways. I mean, he's a really, obviously a very special player, and he's still showing that. And I'm glad that he was able to recover from that injury and come back.
Of course.
The Nets have a lot of work to do.
Like, this is,
What did you say, McKelly?
I missed you for a second.
Oh, am I back? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Am I cutting out? Okay. I'll just say the Nets have a lot to figure out. And you have a first-year coach in Steve Nash. Obviously, a guy that's been around the league a ton. MVP in the league. They still have a lot to figure out, especially on the defensive end and then with their bench. Spencer Dinwiddie is a much bigger loss than what we had originally anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, obviously not having Kyrie there for whatever reason that he's saying that he's not going to be there. But still, like, this Nets team has enough talent to beat a young Thunder team. Like, they should have beaten the Thunder last night.
Yeah.
There's really no excuse whatsoever for them not to, especially at home. And obviously the home road stuff, like, that's an interesting storyline that continues to just be weird, and it's obviously weird because there's no fans in the stands. Because the Thunder, what are they 5-1 on the road so far this season? Mm-hmm. Like, that shouldn't be a thing.
No,
but it's also for young guys who have their legs and that just want to get out there and they have something to prove, which that is something the Thunder have, is that they've got a ton of guys that have something to prove. And night in, night out, they want to go out and prove it. And they're doing a good job. And, you know, on the road or at home, it doesn't really matter. They're going out there. They're playing hard. So huge credit to them. Let's go over to the stream real quick. We've got Shannon Ward from England. Shout out. We have Tommaso Ferro from Italy. Wow, we've got two Italian people on the pod right now. This is amazing. Let's see. I've seen some other people from Amsterdam. Wow. Melbourne, Greece, France, South London.
All over the place. It's great. There was a good question in the chat from Hopes Talk 69. Mm-hmm. Is the Thunder culture too good to tank? A bit.
Maybe
no in the end, because it only takes Brooklyn to say, well, we promised DeAndre Jordan to be here. We promised, we paid Torian Prince, but we don't want any of this. We will give you Dinwiddie, these three players that you clearly have zero use, plus an unprotected first, and in a second, yeah, your culture is good, but you will lose 10 in a row. Like, mm-hmm. It's just going to happen because you cannot, like, Robbie's production is okay, Muscala production is okay, but at a certain point, you will face Anthony Davis, and no matter how many threes you shot, no matter how good your young players play, you're going to lose, especially because team will start to notice that you just take threes and penetrate. So it's just about switching, and Roby will not be wide open. He cannot beat you off the dribble unless you are Vucevic, and it's okay. Muscala will not beat you off the dribble. So you just switch and hope that your second line can bring a guy to limit Shea. And you stay home on everyone but, like, just play like that, and things will change a lot in the next 20 games.
I agree. Scouting reports will get out that you can't just quit on this Thunder team. Like, yeah. Hey, if you want to beat the Thunder, yes, you can do it, but you can't quit. You can't stop. Mm-hmm. And once that gets out there, that this Thunder team just doesn't stop, the Thunder will continue to win some games. I don't think they're going to be a miserable team that's going to lose a vast majority of their games. I do think the Thunder will be a lottery team that will still have a chance to get a top five pick. I still believe that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's going to come with, excuse me, the rest of the league figuring out, like, who these guys are and what they're about. Because if Brooklyn just knew, oh, all we have to do is just play hard all night, okay, great. They probably beat the Thunder 136-129. Still close game, but they didn't. They stopped, and the Thunder took advantage of that, and they grabbed momentum. And, like, momentum's like a real thing. Mm-hmm. It's a real thing in the league. It's a real thing just in life in general, and they grabbed it. So it's an important thing. Huge shout out to Jared Zarin, who says hello from the Mercy ER, which is a hospital. So thanks for being on. I hope if you're somebody that's working at the hospital, thank you so much for what you're doing. If you're in the hospital in the ER, I hope you're okay. I don't know which. I'm hoping that you're just maybe on a break or something, or just getting to work. But huge shout out to you. And let's take a look at the schedule. Got Isaiah from the Philippines. Wow. Thailand. Kenny from Thailand. From Sydney.
It's a first timer. Thailand. Great. Can I make a point about, I was trying to think on the back of my mind about what are the very clear problems that this team has in terms of defense. Mm-hmm. And I think that they cannot play well against guys that have a guy that can penetrate well enough.
Yeah.
Now, is this what happened basically over the games that the Thunder won? Like, Orlando doesn't have anyone who can really put pressure on you off the dribble. They have Vooch that put pressure on our backline and on defense, but Yeah, that's it. And the same you can say about the Pelicans, where we just had a very, very hot night from three. But then New York doesn't have anyone that can really put pressure. And Brooklyn, as good as KD is, his mobility and his ability to attack off the dribble is not the one that the old KD had. So maybe this is a huge part. And I'm curious to see how Dennis Schroeder do against this team. Because like on offense, your space out unit will be effective. But on defense, I wonder what happens when you have a good pick and roll partnership where a guy can really attack you off the dribble and the big man can really hurt you when he gets it.
Yeah.
It will be
that's what happened with Miami. Because they have guys, multiple players that can get in the lane, and then they have really good guys just sitting out on the perimeter that can catch and shoot.
Exactly.
It's really, I mean, it's impressive. And Miami hasn't been great this year. It's not like Miami is just like this hot team. I think they're 500 actually.
Yeah.
Right now. I think the Thunder might actually have a better record than they do at the present moment.
It's crazy.
Which is insane. But a look ahead at the schedule. So it should get rough.
Mm-hmm.
For OKC moving forward. Here's this week, which they get after being on the road for a long time. They're back in town. So they have a back-to-back San Antonio, LA, the Lakers on Tuesday, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I assume that maybe, I don't know if they'll rest on the front or the back end of the back-to-back, but I assume they're going to rest Horford and Hill in one of those games, probably against the Lakers.
Yeah, likely.
So we're going to see a lot of the youngsters against the Lakers, which should be fun. Chicago at home on Friday. Chicago's playing really hard. And so that, to me, is going to be a toss-up type of game. You get Philly on Sunday at home. Now, Philly's got all of the COVID protocols with guys that are out, and who knows who can play. Now, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have only not played, didn't play the other night, just because they didn't want to, essentially. Mm-hmm. They were put on the injury report. Those guys just didn't want to play.
Yeah.
That's why they didn't play. So that will be interesting to see who plays in that game. Then the schedule is Denver, Clippers, Portland, Phoenix, Brooklyn, Houston. And that's that stretch. That's February 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to learn what this team is by that point. Who is this team? We're gonna figure that out pretty quick, and then it gets a little lighter. You get Minnesota twice on a back to back, both at home, which will be strange.
Yeah. What's your TGTT number of wins that will get you definitely worried about our pick? What's the record that worries you on February the 3rd?
If they're at 500, I'm worried.
Well, of course, but they will not be. Let's hope they're not 500. 500 means that you really need to shift and say, well, wow, how do I make, like, it means that Houston is going to be in the lottery and this is your chance to be in the lottery. It's through Houston. Because if you are 500 after this stretch, there's no way you're a bad team. Just no way. Mm-hmm. I would be scared if they win four more.
Yeah.
I don't know where it gets you with four. How many games?
12 games.
Yeah, so they would be 9-16.
I'm not worried then. Because I still think a George Hill trade hadn't happened yet, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I would be kind of scared. Because it means they beat like good teams four times.
Yeah, I mean, what four games could... Like, they could beat San Antonio at home.
Yeah.
They could beat Chicago.
Yeah.
And then here's the other thing, is that there are going to be other teams that are depleted by COVID. And this is going to be something that is going to destroy records. It's going to destroy, like, overall numbers. Mm-hmm. Like, numbers are already kind of jacked up anyways at the beginning of the season. They're even more so because of COVID. And so we don't know, like, Philly and Denver, like, what do they look like once we get there? So, like, that's just another variable. And with the Thunder, like, the Thunder could have an outbreak, too. Like, nobody's immune to it.
Yeah. But there are teams causing, in sport that somehow keep it together. Now, that doesn't correlate necessarily with winning, as the Seattle Seahawks will like to tell you, but they didn't have any positive case for the entire NFL season and were completely dismantled in the wild card. But anyway, yeah, it can happen that you have a COVID-free season, but it's, how can I say it, extremely unlikely.
Yeah. Well, and the Thunder could be that team, because I think they all take it very seriously. So we'll see. Hopefully that's the case. I mean, then I think that you get into the second part of the season when they actually make the second half of the schedule, where it's possible that these guys get the vaccine.
Yeah.
And the guys that want to take it. And then we're able to really move on with the league and with everything without any giant bumps in the road. So yeah, I would say if they win 3 or 4 games, then you start to kind of think, oh, okay. Like, maybe there's something else here. But then after Minnesota twice, it's Lakers, Denver, Milwaukee, Portland, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Miami, San Antonio, Atlanta, Denver.
Yeah. They could win like 6-4 games and then win just 3 over the next 12, whatever. And they could be like way below.
They could 500. Yes. They could win 3 games in all of February.
Yeah.
And that might be success for them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's honest. I mean, maybe they beat Minnesota twice and beat Cleveland. Like, those are the games that stick out. And again, who knows who's playing when? Who knows? But yeah, it is definitely a possibility, because this schedule is just really rough, because the Thunder have already played Charlotte, Orlando twice, the Pelicans, who have been just kind of blah. They played the Knicks. Yeah, they've played a lot of winnable games for anybody.
Yeah.
And I still don't know who this... Like, I know this team is going to play hard. I know they have good young talent. We still have a lot to learn as to who they exactly are. And I think the rest of January, February, we will learn who this team is. And then we'll have to relearn who they are when they trade George Hill. And then... I mean, I still think that Horford's going to be around the rest of the season, but... It's possible that a team sees the production that Horford can still put up, 22, 6, and 3, going 3 of 7 from 3. Wow, great. We'll take him. He'll really help us. And then we'll have to, like, then they probably start Roby. Maybe they start Muscala.
Or whoever comes back in trade. Like, you never know.
Yeah. If they get Tristan Thompson back in a trade or something, you know, then you maybe start
him. Yeah, I still think that watching how they play, Brooklyn may use both to I would say they would complement the team. You have Irving, Harris, Hill, KD, and Horford.
Yeah.
That is a very good team. Now you have to renounce to Dinwiddie in order to make it work. But then it's DeAndre Jordan and Torian Prince. Or Tyre Prince. I don't remember how
kids. Tyran.
Tyran. Wow. It's not that it changes anything. The only thing that really is against this trade is the fact that KD and Kyrie are friends with DeAndre Jordan. But at a certain point, you have to realize that, friendship is extremely important, but you can be friends without working in the same place, and B, DeAndre is kind of done-ish. I mean,
well, and they've identified that, which is great, because he's not starting anymore for them.
Yeah,
they're letting Jared Allen start
or play Josh 30 Allen,
plus minutes a game,
whoever he wanted to call him.
Yeah, DeAndre only played 10 minutes last night.
Yeah,
which is a good indicator of where he is. So maybe they would trade for Horford. I mean, I was texting with my coworker Mike Smeltz, who does a really good Nets podcast called The Glue Guys. You should go check it out if you're just needing, if you're needing podcasts to listen to. His is a really good one. But I was texting with him last night during the game, and before it started, he was like, "We're sworn enemies, you know, until the end of this game." And then he's like, "Except I just need you guys to trade us George Hill." I was like, "It's great." I said, "All you have to do is give us a first round pick." And we're just joking around. Then, like, in the fourth quarter, I was like, "I think we're going to need two firsts for George if you guys really want him." Because we're crushing you.
Yeah. Oh, and it's, I mean, the beauty of a trade between OKC and Brooklyn is that OKC becomes much worse in terms of on the court. But they don't get, like, bad contracts. Like, these are not bad contracts. Torian Prince is just 1 year. DeAndre Jordan probably has an extra year, if I'm not mistaken. Because he signed up for 40, something like that. And then, yeah, so maybe he has two more. And then you have Dinwiddie, which has a player option, but if he wants to play, great. You have Dinwiddie at a very reasonable number, which can complement whatever offense you need next year. And if he doesn't want to be there, he can be traded wherever. So,
yeah.
I would be okay with just a pick, even if it's lightly protected, like top five protected, that rolls for 2 years and then becomes 2 seconds. It's mostly fine. I mean, you don't have to get, if you get like zero on-court production for 40 games, 45 games this season, that is huge value for OKC. Because if you have in you, 45 wins record, it means that it's really on your young players. And if that is the case, awesome. It doesn't seem to be as of today. But at least you know that it's not a fluke and these are like real NBA contributors and you didn't expect that to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Let's look at the standings real quick and then we got to go. The standings don't really matter right now because everybody's just clumped up. There's three losses is the least amount of losses in the league and it's the Lakers, Suns, Sixers and Celtics. Mm-hmm. Pacers too. Sorry, Pacers.
You jinxed them. Exclude you. You jinxed them.
I did. I'm going to start jinxing the Thunder too. I tried yesterday by tweeting like some really positive things about their defense and it just didn't work. It just fueled them. it was not great. The Thunder are if the season ended today, 9 games in, whatever happens, and they just call it. They say, "Yeah, it's over." Yeah. Thunder would be in the playoffs, 8th seed against the Lakers.
Insane.
But they're also San Antonio is 5-5. The Nuggets are 5-5, which that's we talk about like unsustainable records for OKC. Like this is an unsustainable record for the Nuggets. They're going to get better,
but they have issues that George Hill can help fixing.
George Hill could really help you guys.
Yep.
Even Al Horford could really help you guys. Pelicans 4-5. Like they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sacramento's 4-6. They've looked okay at times. The Rockets are 3-5.
Awesome.
Which is very exciting.
This is perfect. It's perfect.
That's extremely exciting because I think they'll end up doing better, especially if James ends up staying for any length of time with them.
But that's the issue. You want them to be not... I mean, I want the Rockets to be around 45% of their win, like below 500, but not like 20%. Because otherwise, it's too bad. And James will clearly want...
It's too scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, give us the 8th pick, Rockets.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
We want number five.
If we want to be extremely greedy, that is it's top four protected, right?
Yeah, top four.
He needs to be number five. But that becomes, I mean, I would be worried. If it's the 12th, 11th worst record in the league, well, best record in the league, in the Western Conference, that is what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Like a good amount of teams that are worse, but them being kind of outside of the playoffs. That would be sweet.
It would be sweet. Yeah, let's just see. Let's just hang on. Let's see what this team becomes. So far, so good. Really huge credit to Thunder culture. Huge credit to the development of everything, the coaching staff, the team, everything. I mean, it's just very impressive. So big shout out to them today. We'll see who they are at the end of this month. But until then, let's just it's okay to enjoy this. I actually really enjoyed the game. So just enjoy it, and we'll see where it goes. Make sure you follow Michele on Twitter at Mikey Berra. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew K. Schlecht. Hope you guys just have a wonderful Monday. And just like the Thunder, you guys are all too good to tank.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.